Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio with your host, Steve Pallas and Jonah Vella. We are coming to you from the studios of RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula, and we'll be bringing you the latest and greatest in the news from the world of grassroots sports. Welcome to the show, Steve.
I'm going well, Joe. Great to be back again. I think it's very, very good to be back. And can you believe that we've actually gone through our show long enough that people are giving us feedback in the format of the show?
I think that's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. And not only that, but the feedback we've actioned. So it's not just a matter of people just giving us feedback and we're reading it and then dismissing it. We've actually
actioned. Oh, we do that. We do that.
No, you do that. I don't do that. I take them all very seriously. And speaking of actioning feedback that we've received some, as you mentioned, feedback on the format of the show, and that's made us have a rethink about how that we present the information. And there's a lot of information that we like to present to you. So we've now come up with a new format for the radio show, which is going to be incorporating more of the current affairs or the more of the current sports news that's circulating around out there in the world of grassroots sport. Now, part of the feedback that we received was that all the information is great, but we'd like to hear more of the current news that's going on. So we've tracked down a few reliable and fantastic news services, as well as the people that we have on the ground and all the relationships that we've formed over the years as we've worked in grassroots sport, to be able to bring you a really extensive network of news sources that we can then relay to you as part of our program. So we'll be calling that Sports Community News, and after our little intro that we do every week, we'll be then jumping into our Sports Community News, where we'll be talking about all the latest news that comes out of Sports Community HQ, as well as all the latest news that comes from other agencies out there, whether it be governments supporting sport or sporting organisations or clubs or international organisations, or maybe even research that may or may not affect grassroots sports clubs out there. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's all about making our news content a little bit more current. So just recapping, in the next couple of weeks, we'll have a sports community news element to our show, which goes over all the current sports news and research that's out there in the marketplace. So look forward to presenting that for you.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pallas and Jonah Vella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au.
Okay, welcome back to Sports Community Podcast, here with Joe and Steve. We have got our most, probably our favourite guest of all time, Steve,
what do you
don't
mean,
we?
Probably, Joe.
there's no probably about it. Just an absolute gem, Sam Squires, and she's going to be here talking to us about the 10 most powerful female leaders in world sport. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
No, Sam, we had to have you back. We were inundated with feedback after your first time on the show, which was where you were talking about
feedback or complaints?
No. We get a lot of complaints.
No, the complaints are about us. The feedback, the positive feedback was about you.
And I'm pretty sure we've just launched this week a little bit of a video summary about what happens with grants and what happens in the week in sports community. So a video summary of seeing Stephen and Joe. We have great faces for radio, but not so much for video. So we're expecting quite a few complaints.
Nothing a bit of hair and makeup can't help, don't worry.
Well, we have neither. Now, I'm going to try and drag this up out of the gutter, Joe. And when you joined us the first time, Sam, it was fantastic. And for those that haven't listened to that first episode with Sam, Sam's a veteran journalist, a sports journalist with Channel 9 in Brisbane, but has been all around the world reporting on sports. So, Sam, thank you very much for joining us again. You're also the founder and editor for just an amazing website I love to follow called sportet.com.au, where you tell stories of women in sport from a completely different angle. And the story this week is, I've just found, absolutely sensational. The 10 most powerful female leaders in world sports. You didn't worry about Australia. You just went the whole world. That's Take me through the background to that story and the logic as and how you went about researching it to start with.
Well, it wasn't easy researching it. I think I just didn't want to leave anyone off. And, of course, we're talking high-profile people here, but, I mean, people that work in the background of sports organisations. So we're not talking athletes or else, because then it was, I just wanted to put Serena Williams and Maria Sharapova and Lee Na and all wonderful women who are also powerful in sport. But I thought I just wanted to do it in the people in administration, in sports administration, because we're always hearing about how it's, you know, sport is male-dominated. And I thought, well, who are the women out there that are leading these sports organisations and sports clubs? And got about to researching who was out there and just found some incredible women with fantastic stories. And they're strong women, they're smart women, they're powerful women, they really are. And they're leading the way for women in sport. I actually had a friend who works at Al Jazeera, and so she does a lot of international sport. So I gave her my list, and then she gave me her list, and I put them together and came up with these 10 incredible women from all around the world. And I think I was just reading their stories, I was empowered. I just felt so proud, and you know, and I thought, far out, like, women can do this. Women can have a future in women in sport and lead from the top. And and I thought, wow, if that's what I'm feeling, then, you know, what is it for little girls out there to go, okay, well, yeah, I love my football, or I love my soccer, and okay, well, I can take a role, and I love my business, or around there, so I can become a leader in sport as well. And I think we'll talk about this more, but I think we need more women as leaders in sport, only that, you know, to help improve and to grow women in sport in general, I think. So, you know, I think women in sport will get more coverage, more publicity, more money when we have more female leaders out there. I think that will contribute to that greatly. And I think we're already seeing that with Moya Dodd, who's the only Aussie that makes that list. And Moya Dodd, of course, is on the FIFA Executive Committee, one of the first female women to be allowed on that FIFA Executive Committee. And we've talked about Mia on Sportet before as well. And so there were, last year, FIFA had, they've never had any women, and they opened up three places for three women, and Moya Dodd was selected. And, you know, already we can see her little fingerprints on a lot of different decisions on FIFA. One of them, which has affected Australia, has been $500,000 grant to help develop women's soccer in Australia. So that's got Moya Dodd written all over it. And we're also seeing, you know, she was instrumental in having FIFA overturn a ban on women playing the burqa, with the burqa on, which was really important, which basketball at the moment is really struggling with. We saw that at the World Championships, with one team pulling out because they weren't allowed to wear with their burqas on. But it meant it wasn't helping growing the sport in many Asian and Middle East countries, and soccer prides itself on being the world game. And they had this ban on women playing in burqas, and as a result, a lot of women left the sport. The Moya Dodd was instrumental in having FIFA overturn that decision, and that's, of course, helped more women to play. So, I think that's how I came up with it. But I just love all these different stories of these incredible women who have had to cut, like, to get to the top is not easy, whether you're male or female.
Yeah.
But in their time, they've had to overcome quite a few extra hurdles. Being female, so to see them overcome those and being instrumental in their organisations and sport is just inspiring.
Oh, absolutely! And as we go, we'll work our way down the list, because I found the list extraordinary for a whole range of reasons. But what we'll do is we'll start to see the learnings, and one of the things that we see in grassroots sport all the time, particularly with the number of people that come to our training sessions all around the country, is that it's probably 80% men at best coming to our training sessions, and probably the men to women ratio just generally on the committees of local sports clubs is reflective of what it's like at elite and professional sport as well, and that's, you know, in this day and age, that's just got to change for a whole range of reasons. That are, you know, relating to a whole range of reasons, which we'll explore as we go through and you tell the stories. But there's a couple of things that struck me out of the list, and we'll talk about the individuals straight away. And the number one person that you've got, most people don't relate to sport at all, and it was Condoleezza Rice from America, and yet you've rated her, and your selection committee, you've rated her the most powerful woman in sport in the world. So tell us that story, and why what has she done that has made it so powerful?
I think I didn't actually rate them. So
they're not in order
at the top, but yeah. So I put there that they're not in any particular order, because it's obviously something that you really can't judge on who does what and how big their sport is or how big their club or organisation. So I made sure I didn't rate them at all. But Condoleezza is at the top because I think she's just such a fascinating and interesting woman. Of course, as we know, she was the Secretary of State under George Bush and held one of the highest offices in America. She's the first African-American female to do so, and just the second African-American to do so. So she's always had a big interest in American football, so in gridiron. And she was also the first female to be admitted as a member of Augusta, where, of course, the Masters is held every year, which has been all male up until a few years ago. And Condoleezza Rice was one of the first of two female members. They had two female members come in at the first time. But she's always said, like, football, American football has always been her passion. And I think in a 2002 interview with the New York Times, they asked her, what would be your dream job post-politics? And she actually said it would be the NFL commissioner. So, but at the last year, she was selected as the first member of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, which doesn't seem like much, but given her background, given her leadership credentials, and at the moment, you know, NFL is going through a massive change with the Ray Rice scandal, which has definitely hurt them at the moment, and a lot of people are calling for Condoleezza Rice to become the new NFL commissioner. So watch this space. It won't be too long before the most powerful women in world politics at one stage will now become the leader and the most powerful person in NFL. Very carefully. And I think her role in the college football system was almost like a lead in to getting involved in the NFL. But to have someone like that with her experience, with her leadership, her credentials would grow the sport and would just be huge to have her involved in NFL.
Yeah, it's interesting that, well, I think it's a tick in one regard for the NFL that it's an attractive career option for anyone of the stature of Condoleezza Rice, let alone the fact that Condoleezza's a female. Do you think that, and for those Australian listeners that really don't necessarily follow the NFL, Ray Rice has just recently been sacked from the playing the NFL because of domestic violence, where I think it's beyond allegedly, hit and knocked out his wife in a lift. And initially, the NFL Commissioner Goodell, who's only very, very new into the job, gave Ray Rice a 2-week suspension, and then video of the incident came out, and it really, really public uproar has now seen Ray being suspended indefinitely. So you see that you're predicting of the future is that Condoleezza will come in as chair of the NFL.
Yeah, that's just my information. That yeah, it's always been her dream and something that everyone sees her as and sees that potential of that happening. And I think with the Ray Rice, it was just handled so badly. The video came out after the 2 week ban was initially given to him from the NFL. But there's a lot of talk, and there's been some.
Well, there's an investigation, isn't there?
Yeah, and a lot of people have come out and said, well, no, the NFL actually bought Vision beforehand. And if you've seen it, it's basically he's hit his wife in a lift and then he's dragged her body outside of the lift. So it's pretty horrific.
Unconscious, yeah.
Unconscious and just, yeah, it's frightening vision. So, and something that, you know, people are now saying that the NFL tried to sweep under the carpet. So this could open the door for Condoleezza Rice to come into that position, and wouldn't that make headlines around the world? So,
Absolutely. Now, one lady, second on your list, that is in a CEO role of a very traditional male sporting competition is Debbie Jevons, from the CEO of England Rugby.
Yeah, so she's the CEO of England Rugby 2015.
Sorry, 2015. Yep.
For the World Cup next year. So obviously, one of the biggest sporting events in the world, and yeah, she's the head of the CEO of overseeing absolutely everything that goes on. But she was also heavily involved as the director of sport for the London Olympics and the Paralympics. And I think what I love about her is that her whole organising committee for Rugby World for England Rugby 2015 is made up of 50% females. And I just love, there's a quote from her. She's like, well, of course it would make up 50% of my team, because women make up 50% of the population. So ignoring one half of that talent pool it's common sense, not just business sense. So, you know, like, sports industry isn't just it doesn't have to be categorised as a female thing. So it's as a male thing, rather. It just makes common sense to do that, not just good business sense. So I think we're the headlines all around the world. We're always hearing about how, you know, we should have quotas for CEOs for women and more leadership roles for women in business in general. And I mean, sport isn't immune to that at all. The sport is big business, is what we've seen. So it's nice having these females lead the way. And you're right, it does make good. It makes common sense, not just good business sense. That's my favourite saying from Debbie Jevons, which I've included in the article as well.
Yeah, and it's just logic, isn't it? And that flows all the way down to the grassroots level, isn't it? There's just absolutely no reason why, apart from tradition, that our committees of grassroots sports should be dominated by one gender or another. And that I mean, if we look at predominantly female sports, which are kind of in the minority, we also have heavily female dominated boards, which could be certainly enhanced with having a male perspective, but predominantly it's the other way with male dominated boards, and that's just being just flies in the face of common sense and logic. But really only in the CEO ranks of elite professional Australian sport, there's really only one CEO that I know of, which is Raylene Castle at Canterbury Bulldogs.
That's in the NRL. And,
yeah.
And there are more women popping up in sport. I think the AFL, I mean, I don't know that too closely, but the AFL have quite a few women in leadership roles. And Raylene Castle has just been instrumental. And who I actually thought about putting on my list, because I admire what she was able to do over in New Zealand for netball, which is as big as rugby over there, and everyone watches it. And I just think she was fantastic in being able to grow that sport in that country, being a women's sport as well. And then, you know, taking over from Todd Greenberg, who really changed the culture and turned the Bulldogs around. They were huge shoes to fill for anyone. And Raylene Castle has done a great job at the Bulldogs. So I thought about putting her on the list for a while, but then I thought, oh, I'm being a bit too Australian-centric in having Raylene there. So then I replied, given the size of the NRL compared to other sports, I decided against it. But, yeah, I have huge admiration for Raylene Castle. She's just amazing. So, but, yeah, you are absolutely right. I think the more women who can get in these leadership roles, the more other women will say, well, hang on, it doesn't have to be a male thing, and it is possible, and I'm passionate about sport, and I love it, and why can't I be involved? And I have the credentials to be able to do that. So it's a microcosm for the rest of society. I mean, I only had a friend the other day. She's got a PhD, and just she works for Cochlear. That's what she's doing, you know, helping develop the cochlear implants. Yep. So she went to a seminar, two-day seminar for startups, and very smart girl, and she was horrified, and she sent me the vision from, and sent me a letter, because in one of the speakers that they had, who's a successful businessman, he said to them, in encouraging them to hire females, and he said, and she said, oh, she thought, oh, this is good. He said, yeah, absolutely hire women. He said, they're just like men. He said, they'll do exactly the same job, but you just don't have to pay them as much. Openly said this. Then even had a slide up on the screen which said, women like men, only cheaper. To think that he could be a professional
speaker,
verbalising that, thinking that that's a norm and that's okay. You know, there's no, you know, we still so far behind, aren't we, in society when AV still happens and women aren't getting paid as much as men. I just can't believe that this would still be an issue. And then for someone to openly encourage it, hiring women because they are just as good but you don't have to pay them as much, is just disgusting
in its logic, to be fair.
In society, to think that that's okay.
Well,
it just shows you that we've got a lot of ground to cover in terms of gender equality. And, you know, and that stretches over in sport, but it's still massive in society as well. That's why I think I like how these women have had to overcome such, gender equality in their lifetime and in their career.
Yeah, well, one person that did that, and in a discussion that was really emotional and also really logically based, was Stacey Alistair with she was instrumental in, as you say in the article, instrumental in securing equal prize money for female tennis players. And I was really watching that debate closely a couple of years ago as that was going, because at the Grand Slam level, there's different outputs. You know, men play five sets, women have three sets. So it's not an apples and apples discussion anyway, and I was really interested to see how that was going to evolve. And as we all know now, that men and women get equal prize money, and your third person, Stacey, was instrumental in that discussion.
Absolutely. So too, Billie Jean King, who's just been fantastic for tennis, you know, ever since the battle of the sexes. So, and on Sportet, we've got a good article up there about, you know, about women playing five sets. And I get this from men all the time. Men try to challenge me all the time, like, why would women get equal prize money when they only play three sets? And the truth of the matter is that women want to play five sets. We've seen it so much that, you know, a lot of the women want to play five sets. And let's be honest, if some of the greatest, all the greatest tennis matches in history would have been over in the second set if they were playing three sets. So I think it would be great for women's tennis if they did play five sets. For those people who said that they don't have the skill or anything like that, that's not the case. Let's be honest. Sam Storza would win more matches because she always wins the first set and then loses the second. And the women out there, they want to be able to play five sets as well. But I think what's stopping them is, and a lot of the men are jumping on board now trying to get the women to play five sets as well. And, the Grand Slam schedule does not allow for five sets.
Yeah.
That's... Think of Flushing Meadows every year. There's one day of rain and that whole schedule is just put into chaos. And they can't afford to, you know, unless they stretch it out, which they're not prepared to do at the moment. That's the main reason why they're not playing five sets, because the WTA has been trying to push women to play five sets because they know that would help the women's game so much more. Serena Williams has been really vocal on that. Billie Jean King has been really vocal on that. Martina Navratilova has been really vocal on that as well. So, for the fact that they did finally get equal prize money is just, and it is deserving. I don't care what anyone says, it is deserving. These women are professionals. They train just as hard as the men. They give as much entertainment as men, and they make you know, broadcast figures as well, you know, wouldn't be the same if it wasn't for the women. So there's no argument there whatsoever. It's happened, which has been, which should be the benchmark for other sports as well. But also, Stacey Alistair has also been great in being able to get, you know, the record incredible international broadcast rights deal for the WTA as well, for women's matches, which can't be ignored. So, yeah, I think tennis definitely, in terms of parity between male and female sports, she's been able to really lead the way, and tennis has led the way with that as well. And hopefully other people will watch and listen. And that's why, you know, we have the household names for the tennis stars. You know, everyone knows Serena Williams and Maria Sharapova and Caroline Wozniacki and the like, you know. So she's been fantastic and deserving of that as well.
Yeah, and that discussion about what's the right duration is not, or length of game is not limited to tennis and women. I was driving today, and it's in America, it's playoff time for the baseball, and two of the series have been decided in straight sets at a best of five, and the discussion really was, well, should it be best of seven? And I've gone, geez. And so that discussion kind of about the ideal duration, that goes on for all sports. But as one of
women didn't used to play, didn't run the full length of
marathon either. Yeah, that's right.
You know, and then there was the discussion, oh, they wouldn't be physically able to, and all that stupid crap, really. So, and, you know, it's not even a discussion now.
No, that's right, because it's
proven them wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's one the sport that probably, or NFL is probably a good sport that you wouldn't necessarily associate females with, but another sport you traditionally haven't associated females with is motor racing and speedway. And Frances Kennedy, the CEO of the International Speedway Corporation in America, is out of America, is your next most powerful woman.
So this is a family business. Her grandfather, founded NASCAR, which of course is massive in the US, and she's been able to carry on working for the family company with this. But of course, you can't do that, and it's not a without having the knowledge and the background to be able to take the sport to the next level, and she's been able to do that. So. The International Speedway Corporation, a bit confusing, is Australia's basically the most powerful racetrack ownership organisation. So they own all the racetracks, including Daytona as well, which of course is massive. So, the fact that in Australia we know all about NASCAR and we know all about Daytona, it just shows us that she has been instrumental in being able to grow these into an international audience as well. So she's another incredible woman.
Yeah, and what she's proven, and having done a little bit, having been to Daytona myself and knowing a little bit about the story, and I must admit I was really excited to go there and drive there actually, was that yes, she got the opportunity through the family business, but opportunity is one thing, delivery and sustainability and delivering on the objectives of the sport. I mean, sport will spit you out very quickly if you don't deliver, regardless of who you are and what your family name is and what gender you are. So I think she's a very practical example of someone who has been given an opportunity and then just absolutely through sheer ability and capacity been outstanding in her delivery. And so, I mean, in one regard, she's almost the equivalent of the female marathon runner, isn't she? She's gone completely against traditional thought and, just through performance said, hey, this is in the petrol head world of male speedway racing. She said, well, not only can we do the job, we can be absolutely outstanding at it. So, and that's one of the key themes, I think, from a local club perspective, is that we need to be creating opportunities for and welcoming and inviting women and girls into the leadership roles on and off the committee within the clubs and making them welcome, and as we do anybody. But certainly there's certainly that perception that that you've that the key roles within clubs are still predominantly male, which is just based on tradition more so than anything else. Well, certainly not capacity and not skill.
Tradition or exclusion, not always the factor, but as well. But you know, as more women play sport and more women get involved in sport as well, and you know, it really has, because it's starting to turn really, and things are starting to change. So you know, it's sometimes it takes time, but people in positions of power have to realise that you just can't exclude someone's expertise because of their gender. So
no,
and and the women are out there wanting to get involved and have the expertise to be able to take your sport to a level and to a place it's never been before.
Now, I had a little bit of a chuckle at your next person, because it wouldn't be a list put together by a media person if it didn't have a media angle, I wouldn't have thought. And outstanding choice in Laura Gentile as Vice President of ESPNW. Just tell us a little bit about Laura's story and why you thought her role in sport, and she's not even directly involved in the administration of sport.
Yeah, but she's been fantastic. She's been a part of ESPN as a director for some time, and ESPN made the decision to really focus on women's sports and to drive women's sports through the media. So they have their own new section, which is, of course, ESPNW, which is a new website. And I'm only thinking it's just a website, but they have they tell great stories of women in sport there, and great news and really promoting it. And I love going onto their website and going, okay, I wonder what's happening in world sport for women. I find it just such a great place. And I can see that growing. I can see ESPNW becoming its own channel. And these are part of the plans I'm sure that they must have, becoming its own channel and growing that. You know, and America's about to have its first all-female sports talk show. So, you know, it's all starting to really change. And ESPN, you know, trying to get on top of that, and Laura is one who's in charge and the vice president of ESPNW. So it's been able to grow in its popularity and its influence as well. So just watch this space as well. So she's vice president of ESPN, which of course is one of the world's most powerful sports channels, and the fact that they have identified and tried to push and promote women's sports through this website is just a start. So watch for a new channel, watch for all different things starting to emerge from ESPN, and it will be on the back of Laura's leadership.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things with the American media companies particularly is they don't do anything for any other reason than the financial return. Yeah,
exactly.
To make money.
So they can identify that when there is money in women's sport, which of course is a lot of people. And I just think it's so, how many times do I have to hear, but women aren't interested in sport? And I'm so sick of people saying that. And I think it's a dangerous thing to say. You know, I've been told since I was little that girls aren't interested in sport, and it's just simply not true. But I wonder how much of, you know, the women who don't like sport out there, it's such a cultural thing. You know, you're told that. You've learned that, because at an early age we're told, no, women aren't interested in sport and girls aren't interested in sport. And it's outright wrong. So,
oh, absolutely. And for someone like ESPN to go down the path of creating content and supporting women's sport, Joe and I talked earlier about lots of the research that's going on around the world, but there's no more greater validation of the interest of females and women and girls in sport than the fact that someone as commercially driven as ESPN are now targeting that group, and that's just validation enough that, you know, women and girls absolutely love sport, and there's enough of them that's attracting the commercial element to sport.
And men as well. Men are interested
in female sport, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Men should be. If you're not interested, you should be interested in women's sport. So it's all part of it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think I mentioned to you last time when you're on the show that my absolute favourite all-time sporting moment, even in front of Kieran Perkins at Atlanta, was Kerry McCann coming into Melbourne Stadium in the Melbourne Marathon. And
absolutely.
You know, I've been to 4 or 5 AFL Grand Finals and 2 NRL Grand Finals, and yet that's my favourite my favourite sport. Now, speaking of favourite sports, Joe's favourite sport is the round ball game, and your next one is...
come on.
Sit down, Joe. You've contributed nothing to the interview so far. He's just been sitting here watching the telly the whole time through the interview, just giving us nothing, Sam, while we carry the show.
I was wondering where he'd gone.
Oh, you're welcome to my week.
He's back for Barbara Berlusconi, though, because everyone loves Barbara Berlusconi. So, yeah, this is an interesting one, actually. So, she's a very smart woman, but she is, of course, Silvio Berlusconi, the former Italian
Prime Minister.
Yeah. She's also the owner of Real Madrid.
AC Milan. Rather.
And so one of the biggest football clubs in Italy, and he's the owner. His daughter is now the vice president and CEO of that club. So she was on the board and the only female director. She had a few clashes with the club CEO, Adriano Italiano.
Yep, well done.
Named correctly. Now they both share that role. So she's... she's been with them since 2011, I think.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
2011. So, yeah, she's, I don't want to say she hasn't done it that way, but she, for her, in such a short time, to be able to change things around and now become the vice president and CEO, she's a powerful woman. Whether you like her or not, whether you agree with her or not, she is a powerful woman. So
and
she makes my list.
And taking on a CEO that's been in the role for 28 years.
And a close friend of your father as well.
Yeah.
So a lot's gone on behind the scenes. But I think for her to take on that role, she's not just treating being a part of the board directors as a bit of a, it's a career for her. It's a job for her. She has... They haven't had the results that they've wanted, and she didn't like the line that the CEO was taking, and now she's in it as well. So for her to be able to make those changes and to be in that position, you can't deny, whether you like her or not, that she is a powerful woman.
Oh, no doubt, but also to be given the opportunity, regardless of who the owner is, to be given the opportunity to take on the role at that level is an indication of competency, yep. not just power. And again, it's another example of, yes, opportunities come from who you are, but opportunity, we need to create those opportunities, because once people get into the roles, they flourish with if they've got the right skills and the right knowledge and the right experience and the right support around them. So that's what we need to keep thinking about when we're putting on any committee members, is not necessarily race, gender, or anything else. It's skills and ability to do the role, and Barbara certainly in the early stages of her role seems to be in that. Now, Joe, what would you be thinking about what she's done so far with AC Milan? Your thoughts?
Well, she's kept him out of the headlines, and there's a lot of headlines that go on in Italian football, so that's an achievement in itself. And just lately, there's been some accusations flying at Juventus. Italian football is an extraordinarily male-dominated sport, and a history of practices that are dubious, to say the least. So for her to get to go into that arena and take on one of the biggest clubs in the world, 5 times, 6 times European champions, massive supporter base all around the world, and steer the direction of that club. That's a huge achievement, and impacts a lot of football followers around the world, because they do have such a big following. So I agree with that. It's whether you like her or not, she's there and she's doing the job. Yeah.
Now, Joe, just to keep you in the conversation, we might as well just change the order of yours a little bit, Sam. Karen Brady. is another very, very powerful, undeniably powerful in the world of the round ball game. And her story is one that probably the opportunities came about from her own ability as opposed to her family links to the sport.
Yeah, so she, at 23, it's hard to believe that she became the managing director of Birmingham City Football Club. So she was the first woman and the youngest director of a Premier League club when they were then promoted to the Premier League. So at that stage, they weren't promoted. They were. She held that position, and she pretty quickly became known as the first lady of football in the UK. So, and, you know, when they were, I think it was, in 2009, they were, I can't remember when they were promoted, and then it was sold in 2009. And, of course, you know, she was the one that led them through, you know, the sale of the club and the profits and making sure that it is a profitable business, which we know a lot of Premier League clubs in the UK aren't. She was then pretty quickly picked up and she became the vice chairman of West Ham, so which is another Premier League club. So, and she's just been unbelievable in promoting women in business and being a role model and an ambassador for women in business. So to do it in that, which is very male dominated, to do it at 23 is huge, and then have that club promoted, then sold, and she's and now to be the vice chairman of West Ham, another huge club, and they took, of course, the Olympic Stadium. So. As their home ground after it was built after the Olympics. So she's just been a fabulous leader for that club.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Now, just flying down the list in the couple of minutes we've got left, we've talked. The next one on your list is Moya Dodd, which we've spoken about at length, and or not at length, but initially in the show. But really, when you think about the magnitude of what she's achieved to be one of the first three women appointed to FIFA. That's
which FIFA is, and even when she was appointed, there's an article on Sportet, you know, it was a fairly bloody step bladder, couldn't help himself, and, you know, just he's so ingrained in him himself. He is a very sexist man, of course, you know, when asked about women's football, you know, he wanted them to play in short skirts and rather than shorts. And
oh, no, he didn't say that, did he, Sam?
You know he did, Joe.
No, no. Never short of blunder. He, well, and then when she was appointed, he goes, oh, she's a good candidate and a very good-looking candidate. So the creep stepladder, you know, managed to get that. And, I mean, I would have liked to have seen that the idea was that they were going to have, like, a female finally on the FIFA Executive Committee. And in the end, they created three extra places rather than maybe having those women take three of the already existing places, but it doesn't matter. They have a vote on that board. They have power. And Moya Dodd, as I said before at the start of this interview, she's been instrumental and been able to already make huge changes to the sport, which will help it to grow. You know, she's a former Matilda as well. She represented Australia. Yeah. Mm. Been a successful businesswoman as well. And she is just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, and even in Australia, I think, I wrote an article in the Daily Telegraph, you know, like just last week, they, you know, the Matildas are rated higher than the Socceroos, but they really struggle to get the support, I believe, from the FFA. I get frustrated at the FFA. I can't believe, you know, they still play some of their matches and their international friendlies, which are closed off to the public.
Yes. So yeah.
You're talking to the FFA about it, like, oh, you know, it's very expensive to get lights and it's just not financially viable. I said, I just can't agree with you. I'm sorry. I can't say that that's okay. I said, I think you're really missing out on a huge opportunity to grow your sport. You know, get local clubs in, get schools in, do what you have to. But I think you've got a greater responsibility. Those little girls out there who are trying to get role models and trying to see their role models, to play those girls in front of them. It doesn't mean you have to take them to the biggest stadiums, but you have to make them accessible to little girls out there. And, you know, people go, oh, it may not be financially viable, but that's just looking at the small picture. Look at the big picture. Those girls grow up the sport. They have a good interest in the sport. They keep that interest. They play the sport. They want their kids to play that sport. They become members of teams, of clubs. They come, you grow your membership that way. And then instead of excluding 50% of the population, which females are, you know, you're inviting 50% of the population from an early age to take part in your sport rather than ignoring them, letting them drift away from the sport, and then later on try to get them back as members.
Yeah, it's very much short-termism as well. When you compare and contrast, and Football Federation Australia have done an extraordinary amount right in the last 10 years, pulling the sport together and taking it to where it is. But
the female side of it.
Yeah, but in comparison to, say, Aussie Rules, who have got a stated strategic objective to have a televised league within by 2020, which is literally only 6 years away, well, five seasons away now.
100%. They're doing really well with their in being able to professionalise the women's side of the game.
It's with their draft and their annual Bulldogs versus Melbourne game, and it's just a step along a very obvious path as we're watching that go. We have spoken about the world of business, and your last person, Jeannie Buss, she combines the world of business and the world of sport in her role as part owner and president of NBA, the LA Lakers, NBA team, the LA Lakers, which is one of the biggest
teams in the world, really, the LA Lakers. It's worth $1.35 billion according to Forbes, but then when the LA Clippers, of course, were sold for $2 billion, that pushed up their value, and our Business Insider say that the Lakers are worth $4.7 billion. So her father as well, Jerry, he owned Lakers up until 2013, and there's a number of his children still involved, but it was Jeannie that he wanted to be the Lakers representative on the NBA Board of Governors. So he's identified her, and she's been fabulous for the club. So it takes more than just having the contacts to get you into those positions or into that sport in the first time. You've got to have the business know-how to be able to grow it and see that it is continuing to grow.
Oh, for sure. And it comes back down to skills and ability to deliver, which is certainly not linked to gender. So, I mean, the two things that have, as we've been talking, that have come out for me looking at it from a grassroots perspective, is that clubs have got to, I mean, nothing happens in grassroots clubs unless there's a desire for it to happen.
Yeah.
And there really does need to be a conscious desire of clubs to open up their committees to all the different groups within their community, of which females are certainly just one of those groups that are not necessarily represented on the committees, but there has to be that conscious decision to create the opportunity, much like the FFA did. But on the other side of the coin, there needs to be a level of courage, doesn't there, from the ladies who take up the opportunity or force themselves in.
And to push and to say, well, no, hang on, I can do this, better, I have the capabilities, you shouldn't be ignoring me just because of my gender.
Yeah, courage absolutely. And strength.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's coming through to me is these ladies have on your list, which I think congratulations on your list. I think it is an incredible list, and I think it shows kind of where sport's heading. And if that's where sport's heading, that's a good place for sports to be heading, and it's a really 100%. Good place for grassroots sports to be heading.
But
as
you're
well.
Right, nothing happens unless. Push for it. So if anyone's out there and think they have the expertise at their local club, push for it. You should. The club will only benefit from your involvement.
Absolutely. Well, Sam Squires, thank you so much. Joe's just glaring at me for the fact that we've gone 45 minutes and he's got no idea how he's going to cut that into a radio show with everything else we do. So thank you so much for sharing it.
Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, thank you so much. And for our listeners, check out Sam's website, www.sporthet.com.au. Subscribe to the email newsletter because it's the stories, not just the stories, but the angle that you take on sport is just fantastic, Sam, and congratulations on that. And how can our listeners follow you on, say, Twitter? Can you remember?
You can follow Sporthet on @sporthet_au or Sam Squires, which is just S-A-M, and it's spell my name funnily, which is S-Q-U-I-E-R-S, not R-E-S. So Sam Squires or @sporthet_au.
Fantastic. Sam, thank you so much for joining us. I know we only gave you 2 minutes' notice, so thank you very much for joining us again. And I look forward to I hope that we can – well, we'll come up with another angle, and I hope you'll be able to join us on the show again.
Thank you. I'd love to. Thanks so much, guys.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, welcome back to Sports Community Podcast with your hosts, Steve and Joe. Wow, mate, what a fantastic ambassador for sport Sam Squires is.
Oh, absolutely love her angle on sport and her view of the world. And
we were planning to probably not have that go as long as it did, but because she is so passionate and so switched on, and we value her insights and her comments so much, we made an executive decision, the both of us, and we decided to keep going with the interview, which meant that we couldn't speak about our grants as much as we wanted to. But all the latest and greatest grant information is on our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au for your perusal at your leisure. So go towards our website when you can, and you'll see all our grant information there. And we do promise that we will be talking about them, the grants, that is, in more depth and detail in our shows to come in the following weeks. So on behalf of me, Joe Novella.
And me, Steve Pallas, thank you for making us part of your sports community.